just found the home of irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. As a licensed private investigator and instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. I'm excited to have one such talented and caring person on the show today in LA Talk Radio's own Dr. Michelle. Dr. Michelle is known for helping people detox the drama from their lives. Her Creating Better Relationships guide makes it easy for people to understand and practice how to create healthier relationships. And let me bring her up and go. Dr. Michelle, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great, Alan. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. I am so glad to have you on the show. I've listened to your show. I've heard some of the great advice that you've given people out there, and I feel honored to now have you on my show as one of the new guys on the station.
Oh, well, you're awesome, and I want to have you on my show too. So,
and I look forward to it. I really
do. Great. Sounds great. All right.
So, well, I'm guessing that if we can detox the drama with our teens, we're going to have less drama in the rest of our relationships.
That's for sure.
All right. How would you define drama for our listeners?
Well, what I've come up with is, after working with individuals and couples, and families for several years, quite a few years, I found that there's a common element, within their problem relationships, and it just seemed like each person felt they needed to get their feelings and points across. They absolutely have to share their stuff. And they usually have wrong assumptions about what the other person is thinking,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So they're more defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And they stubbornly defend their beliefs and arguments. They never come to some sort of agreement to disagree. So there would be an ongoing drama that would continue to fuel for years and years. And I've seen this with couples and families and, of course, teens and their parents. So
sure.
I kind of likened these feuds to an addiction. Several mm-hmm. years ago, I worked at a substance abuse. Primarily, it was a dual diagnosis clinic. Where you had substance abuse and depression and anxiety, something like that. And I watched the common behaviors. So I kind of likened the substance abuse issues with, feuding and fighting. And it's kind of like drama. So I thought, you know what? I need to help people detox from that drama in their life, just like a substance abuse. Because if you don't stop the problem behaviors and learn how to become healthier, in this case, by communicating better and having respect, everybody's going to stay addicted to this emotional argument.
Well, I was going to say, I couldn't agree more. And it sounds like when you're dealing with teens, the difference between having two adults and now when you're dealing with one of them as a teen is one of us needs to be the adult.
Oh, it's really true. It's so true. And I know you work with teens a lot, and I know that you've had to deal with this as well. I mean, it's really frustrating. You must have a lot of parents coming to you really frustrated as well, right, Alan?
Very much so. I mean, they in many cases are just banging their head against the wall saying, what can I do? What is the next, what is the next step to try to deal with this? And that's why I'm so excited to have you on, because I've already gotten emails just from the press release that I sent out from people saying, what a great topic. I'm going to be listening because I have the drama with my team. and some of them actually described a little bit, because I got a chance to talk to a couple people that emailed me over the weekend. And so I got a chance to talk to them or email them back, and a little bit about what the drama is. You know, what is your drama? And I actually made a few notes just from what some of them told me. And you know, with one, I think that, you know, the drama was, you know, the little voice inside, you know, inside their head that keeps, you know, keeps them wondering, you know, is my teenager coming home at night? You know,
right.
You know, that's drama. You know, if the guilt that they're feeling, if they feel like they're not helping their child to be the very best they can be, the parent now is internalizing this and feeling like it's their fault.
Right.
You know, what are some of the things that you can tell them, the parents, that they can A, realize it's not their fault, and B, maybe become a better listener so that you can still let your child vent, because they're going to do it. How you respond to it's going to make the biggest difference, I think.
Exactly. I'm with you on that, Alan. And, you know, those are all normal fears we all have. And, you know, those folks who emailed you and called you, you know, they are not alone. We're all feeling like,
thank you.
Especially when our kids turn 14, we're living with aliens now. I mean, all of a sudden they've turned into these aliens.
Well, and you know what? Now, who was it? John Gray that said, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. So,
right.
So what are you saying? Are you saying that teenagers are from Pluto?
No, you got that right, honey. They are. They're definitely from way, way away from the sun. And they are, you know, it's amazing. You know, we go through pubescence with them when they're in 11 and 12, and they start making these changes. And then they start getting these really independent ideas, you know. They have the fake audience thing that they fear, that everyone's watching them, the imaginary audience, they call it. Everyone's watching them all of a sudden. They have to look perfect, and they have to, you know, people are talking about them, and, you know, they just come into this being of strangeness, and it's very hard for us to remember as parents how we were. Of course it is. And so what I say to detox some of the drama to parents is, if you want a little more satisfying relationship with your teenager, if you want to reduce that drama and pique their interest, because they're pretty zoned out on what we have to say. They're done with us at this particular point. It's really important for parents, like you said, Alan, I think, to follow the thread of their teen's conversation instead of jumping to conclusions. And I think we are all guilty of this, you know, because of those fears you mentioned, that voice at night wondering, you know, oh, are they coming home? They're having a sleepover. Really, what are they doing? You know?
Right.
So I think we can't jump to conclusions. And when they're talking to us, once you've heard what your teen is actually thinking, your response will be much more helpful. So there's a thing that I call, and a lot of therapists use this as well, it's you listen to teenagers without the three C's.
Okay.
And the three C's would be cutting them off, criticizing, and commanding.
Very good.
Those three C's cut down on communication, and they put your teenager at risk of, like, tuning out, you know, what we have to say. I mean, how many times have we been tuned out by our teenagers? You know, they're done. They just shut down. They go into their music, or they start texting their friends, or they go into their rooms, or they're, you know.
Well, I agree, and we should be thankful that at that point they are communicating with us, so certainly don't cut them off. I made the joke one time where I said that all of a sudden, you know, when my teenager turned 14, or maybe this has happened to a lot of other parents, for some reason this great big needle came out of the sky and went in my ear and sucked out half my brain because I got really stupid. I mean,
right.
You know, it just seemed like a couple years ago I pretty much knew everything.
Right. Exactly. No, exactly. That's the thing. And so if you have, let's just say, shall we do some scenarios maybe?
That would be great.
Something that I find that was very similar in my situation. I recall a while back, my teen who's in high school, he said this to me. Something like, you know, Mom, a cop came to school today, and he wasted our time talking about this anti-drug program. He was so stupid. Something like this. Who does he think we are? Come on, we all know about this. Half my friends are blazed on the weekend. And my ears went, what? So a typical parent response, you know, would be, cutting them off would be right in the middle before they start saying something.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-drug programs are not a waste of time. You know, you're defensive, and you're ready to cut them off.
Exactly.
And name
those friends, because you're never hanging out with them again.
That's exactly right. And the way you transition that is, you know, you get more information. You information gathering. It's not, again, commanding. It's information gathering and suggesting. So the commanding would be something like, you're never to talk badly about your school's efforts to keep kids drug-free. You know,
right.
So like commanding. How dare you, you know.
Right, and then you hear the big click.
Exactly, exactly. And like criticizing would be like, only a juvenile delinquent would put down an anti-drug program. You know, something like
mm-hmm.
that. So what you have to do is communication ends. So, you know, teens don't feel safe to share what's on their minds if we're doing all these, if we're, you know, cutting them off, criticizing and commanding. So what they do, they turn to other teens for advice.
That's right.
And they may turn to the wrong teens, you know, and who knows. And we can't control that per se, because our teens are going to be exposed to so many other kids in the school environment, even the private school environment. And they have to make a decision as to who they are going to hang out with. And we have to trust in that decision based on our examples we've set. So, you know, we can fear, and we will continue to fear and worry. But so how to better communicate in that situation? It might be better for the parent to say something like this, you know, in the example I just gave you. You know, when the kid said, anti-drug problems are not a waste of time, or when the kid said, it's a waste of time, the cop was stupid, you might say something like, you know, it sounds like that sheriff's talk really didn't sit well with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me more about that. Why did it bug you? You know?
That's good. That's
good. And the teen may say, well, all he did was talk about stuff we already knew, like I said, Mom. Well, you can continue that conversation by saying something like, so would you have preferred him to talk about things you haven't already heard?
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, so what could he have done differently?
You show them you're listening,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the child, if you don't assume the worst, you know, you set up for questioning, not interrogation questioning, but calm interest questioning. Like the teen may continue to talk and say, I don't know, like, yeah, he didn't say anything useful, like, you know, what to do if your friend starts experimenting with drugs. And what you do is you say something like, as the parent, that's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that. You know, I used to have that dilemma. Empathy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I had that experience when I was young, and set it up. So by leaving out those three C's, the cutting off and the criticizing and commanding, you kind of create the kind of conversation that allows teenagers to feel comfortable and confide in you a little bit more, you know?
Well, and
they're more willing to listen to your point of view with an open mind,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so it may scare or upset you to hear some of the stuff they say. It really is scary sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when my son said that to me, I was horrified. You know, half the friends. Well, I come to find out they aren't his friends. If
right.
you know, most of the kids today call their friends acquaintances at school because they see them at school.
Right, right. And that's why you have in this now MySpace world, you have
exactly.
kids. You have kids online that say, well, you know, I've got 4,233 friends. No,
right.
not really.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it may scare or upset you as a parent to hear their perspective, but the reality is if you cut them off or criticize or command them to do something, it doesn't get rid of their opinions. You know, they'll go underground.
That's right.
So
right.
you're in a better position to be helpful to your kid, and they'll look at you as like, wow, they value what I'm saying. This is such an important thing. No matter how weird or bizarre, or you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they said that. They're a lot of times putting it out there too to get a reaction from you.
That's right.
And if you don't blow up or go continue the drama, you know, fueling that drama, and just, as they say, chill out a little bit and just listen. And even if you're judging within yourself, just listen. And try not to use those three C's.
Well, and I think that's a great point when you use the word fuel the drama, because I think
yeah.
so many parents get stuck in that trap and they start
fueling
it. The drama started. You need to be the adult to know how to put the flames out, not to continue to fuel it. Now, one of the things that you mentioned when you talked about how you came up with the term the detox, the drama, was you tied it to drugs. And I think drugs are a huge problem that
they are.
That many, many parents are now having to deal with their teens. And and I think it's a huge tie-in directly to why there is drama. It's even more difficult to, you know, to detox the drama if they're medicated to begin with. So one of the things I'd like you to provide to our listeners is what are some of the questions parents need to ask themselves to help determine if their child is involved in drugs? Because if they're trying to now detox the drama, and they don't understand why rational speaking is not working, maybe your child's medicated. So what are the questions they can ask themselves and to say, hey, maybe my child is on drugs?
Right. No, that's a really, really good point, Alan. And you look at the signs, and and we discussed this earlier too, talking about teens. You just kind of find out if they've ever been suspended, expelled, or truant from school. Mm-hmm. And now this is just not this, there's a list here, so I'll share with you some of the heads up, red flags here. Mm-hmm. You ask if your teen has had problems with the law. Now, how are you going to find this out? I don't know, but it's more monitoring, and hopefully your child will come home and tell you scary things. Right. I was really scared today, and this is because you allow them to express themselves without judgment. Mm-hmm. A lot of times kids say, I hate school. They'll come home and say, This sucks. This algebra, whatever. I hate this teacher. They're a jerk. And that's a concern. Are you worried that your teen may not finish high school? Their grades are slipping. You see that.
Or you're seeing that it's getting less and less important to them.
Right. They're a parent. Now, and again, they don't have to be 4.3. There are those kids that love school and love studying, and they're really future goals are to go to Oxford universities and, do really well. But then, you're looking at, I guess, an average pool of kids. The average pool are doing well. Mm-hmm. They're hanging in there. But then you start sort of noticing that your child is dipping below that average place in their grades. Their grades are dropping a little bit. You can also look at their behaviors. Is their appearance in personal hygiene slipping? This is a biggie. Mm-hmm. Teenagers sometimes try to make themselves look really good. I know girls are very interested in looking prettier and better and, unfortunately, sexier in these, times. The guys want to look better and look cooler, look hipper, look in whatever. I don't know. But some of these dress habits are they want to express themselves individually with, they have the piercings sometimes, mm-hmm. if we let them. They would want it's illegal to have a tattoo if you're a minor, but some of them have sneaky tattoos. Some of them have bizarre dress, the goth thing. If their personal hygiene starts slipping, if they start really looking off a little bit, you've got to keep an eye on that. Why and who are they impressing?
Well, and I
to look like that.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you're sort of differentiating between the they are going to do different things, dress different ways to express mm-hmm. themselves, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if their personal hygiene is slipping, and that doesn't impress anybody, so that's
right.
So I can see that. That becomes more of a red flag of, this is one of those signs that maybe there's something going on in their life to the where they just don't care enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, you've probably seen in the teens you work with, there's, I call it erratic emotions. They have inappropriate responses, which are way over the top, like violent behaviors.
Sure.
When they're angry or frustrated, something that doesn't come through for them, or a girl didn't call, or a guy didn't call.
Right.
They want to punch the wall. They want to hit their bed. They want to, indeed, teenagers are fueled up with the hormones.
And that's exactly the picture that came into my mind when you mentioned about the inappropriate behavior and the rage over something as simple as, I didn't get the call that I wanted, or I didn't get to go to the place where I wanted. That punching holes in the wall, or taking the door off the hinges.
The manipulation and deceit. Sometimes, have you seen that in a lot of teens that you have worked with? Some of the lying to their parents, the deceit, the ends they go to create stories.
Oh yeah, and it's you know, especially when drugs start to get involved, is that they get more and more removed from the family, from whatever the family was into. If the family was into camping or whatever it was, that becomes less and less important. And their friends and their private time becomes more and more important. And, you know, they'll manipulate the situation so that they can get what they want. So you're right, it becomes more deceitful. It becomes more manipulative. And that's just one of the things. I agree with you. One of the things the parents need to be watching for. It's not in itself something to where you go, oh, well, this is it. My kid's on drugs. But when you start looking at this entire list that you're talking about, if you've got two or three of these, I think you better start worrying.
Oh yeah, yeah. These are like you said. These are red flags, and and they are, you know, you have to really. Really take a look at these things. See, we as parents many times are in denial. We don't want to believe that our kids are doing drugs. We don't want to believe that our kids are doing things that are hanging out with other kids who are really unhealthy, and, you know, some of their belief systems are skewed. So, you know, if you know and you have, you know, evidence that some of your teen's friends are high, or if your teen laughs and talks about, oh, Joe was really high the other day and he got burned, which in the teenage community means they got busted by their parents and they're being randomly drug tested now. Or they got a citation from, as you know, they got a citation, you know, a police citation. Or if they were caught with more, or possession of as a minor, or if they were high, they have to come to court.
That's right.
And the next step is juvie or whatever. Some kind of detention system, some kind of, you know, mandatory behaviors that have to be followed for a period of time.
Right, and that is that is often where my company steps in. Where you have
now, tell me more about what do they do from that point? What does your company do?
Well, in many situations that you just mentioned, where you have the child that he's telling his friends he got burned, and at that point. You know, he may have been arrested or been caught, or something has happened in such a way that he's not either attending school at the same time or whatever. Well, it's very possible that his family has started working with a professional, either an educational consultant, a psychologist like yourself, a psychiatrist, someone that is trying to help them get through it. It might be drug addiction. It might be issues with violence.
Right.
It might be truancy, running away, that they're just not going to school. Well, at that point, an alternative to going into juvenile hall might be for them to go to a specialized program, and that's where we step in. And it might be the school district that's making the decision. It might be the parents. It might be juvenile justice. But, you know, rather than take a child if their issues are with drugs or they're bipolar or there's something that's more of a psychological nature, it makes a lot more sense for us to come pick them up and take them to a specialized program, oftentimes in another state, where they will go and be allowed to go to school and get therapy at the same time.
Right.
So, and a lot of the parents will say, well, you know, I've talked to my professional that I'm working with, and they think that this is a great idea, and I'd love this for my child. There's no way they're going to go. And I may be talking to a single parent, you know, a mom who's, you know, 5'2 and 100 pounds. She says, you know, my son's now 6'2", 230. When I tell him he's going to boarding school in Utah, he's going to look at me and laugh. I can't even get him to come home on Friday or Saturday night. How am I going to get him to Utah? Well, that's where we come in.
And, exactly. Oh, that's great.
Right. Now, and we do oftentimes what's called an early morning wake-up call. And we will have two people that will show up first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. They will wake him up. They will have the parent introduce us and say, this is, you know, Mr. Cardoza and Mr. Spencer, and they're here to discuss with you about what, and again, the school, the professional, whomever it is that's helped her make that decision, but, you know, about what I've tried to tell you about, and you haven't listened. When I've talked to you about it, you walk out the door. Well, now they're going to explain it to you a little bit better, and then we tell her, and she has a very short speech, and she finishes it with, and I want you to know that I love you very much. And we dismiss her. So, and as you know, psychologically, to dismiss the parent and have them leave the home psychologically plants the seed in the child's mind that acting out to push the parent's buttons to control us now doesn't compute.
Right.
So now we have a captive audience. They now feel like they have to listen to us at least to a certain degree. We advise them, we're going to listen to you. We're going to listen to everything that you have to say.
Right.
We'd also like you to listen to us. And we explain to them the decision that's been made, the fact that the parent, school district, or juvenile court, whoever it is that has jurisdiction, the guardian, has made this decision. We have signed documents that say that we've been asked to take them to, and then fill in the blank, whatever the program might be. And we tell them a little bit about the program. And oftentimes they ask, how long is that? You know, I mean, how long am I going to be there?
Right.
We go, it all depends on you.
Wow.
You know, so
that's great.
You know, if you go in there and you go, you know what, I get it. I've got some problems. I'm going to work at my problems and I'm going to get through this. It's probably not going to be very long. On the other hand, if you go in there and decide you're going to buck the system, you're determining how long you're going to be there.
That's great.
So
that's really that's a wonderful intervention.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I feel that I've been blessed to be able to be in an industry like this where we can feel like we are helping the next generation.
Exactly. No, it sounds like a really great service because I do have a lot of parents. I mean, you can counsel a family and their teens for a while and teach them proper respect and proper communication. But if they continue to use or abuse a substance, they'll continue to pull away. And, you know, it just blows up the family. And they do. They have, like you said, my son's 6'3" or whatever. And how I can't even get him to come home. How am I going to get him physically? There comes a time when people like me need people like you and your company and your services to say, okay, the family's done. It is. It's like that intervention program. Everyone says, we're really tired. We're really hurt. We love you. We only want you to get better. And this is the way you're going to do it. So you guys come in and it's really up to them, and that's what's wonderful. It's giving them the responsibility to change their thoughts and their behaviors. And hopefully, by the time they get back home, they've learned a lot.
Yep.
And hopefully, as a parent, we've done our best to talk to them, you know, when they were younger, about the dangers of drugs and alcohol and risky sexual behaviors, you know, all those things that they're turning their curiosity towards.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, parents have set an example for them. Of making rational and moral judgments about those things by our behaviors as parents, you know, not being rageaholics, not being addicts ourselves, doing what we say not to do to the kids, giving them loving support with family values, respect, fairness, you know, and if you haven't instilled in them, like you said, these behaviors, qualities, it's never too late. You always start from right now. Okay, we're going to do for you now. You've gone beyond. You're destroying your life. We're going to, you know, use a helpful group like your group, Alan, and you're gone for a while, and you need to change your own behaviors. We've tried. It didn't work. You got mixed up with the wrong crowd for whatever reason, and that's it. So hopefully after that time of healing and learning and detoxing, then they're back in the home, and this is just the worst case scenario, though. But I mean, it's so nice to know that you're available out there and that they can turn to you for these things.
Well, you just touched on one of the other questions that that came in over the weekend, and it was a parent that emailed in saying that they think that it's too late to build a relationship. In the email, essentially what they were saying is that they've already had so much distrust from the standpoint. The child has stolen from them, the child has been lying to them, and they had made some decisions in trying to get him to treatment in such a way that they lied to him. So you have this, you know, this kind of pretty big chasm to get beyond. And that was one of the questions. It says, you know, what do we do when, and their point was, when it's too late to build the relationship. And I think what you just said is, it's not too late.
Right.
Let's take that and let's say that there's been, you know, a lot of problems in the family recently. What are some of the ways to rebuild that trust between the parent and the teen?
Well, I think it's really important that teenagers feel more empowered when we as parents can show confidence in them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of my young adult clients told me that when she was a teen, her mother was always domineering, giving her opinions, criticizing her. She was, as she told me, all over her. The mother tried to control everything. Control is good. Monitoring is good. But as this, you know, client described to me, she couldn't, you know, go out for a burger with her friends. It was like, where did you go? Who did you see? What boys did you talk to? Did you do drugs? Wait a minute, I didn't like what you were wearing. You know, it was a very, this girl felt completely like she, as a teen, had no head of her own. So
right.
She rebelled.
Right.
She started living a very dangerous lifestyle. She was doing drugs. She moved away from home. She got into a bad situation with an older guy. And then she told me that this was really kind of a cool thing. She told me that she received a letter from her older aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And she always liked this aunt. She was a soft-spoken woman, a lot of wisdom, a lot different from her mom. And this letter she received from her aunt said something like, your mom has told me what's been going on, and it sounds like you've been having a lot of problems lately. I believe you know how to take care of yourself, dear. I've always loved you. I have faith in you, and I know that you'll do what's right.
See, that's great.
Understand that you're hurting the family. Understand that your mother has fears because she didn't have a great life. She's so afraid that you're going to have a tough life like she did. It's all about her own fears. So try to understand her. I'm going to try to get a counselor for the both of you so the counselor can help the mother, you know, express herself to you better and work through her fears. So when she talks to you, it's not completely projection, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she can trust in you and understand you. So what happened was she said after she read that letter, she moved back within a couple of days. And she said, my aunt's honest confidence in me and my aunt knew who I was. And it affected me so deeply that the aunt came in and started, you know, really pulling everybody together as well. So the whole family sort of got together and rallied behind this young woman, and there was more empathy and understanding and listening. And what we have to do as parents, too, which is so important, is lose our projection of our own early stuff and trauma and fears and bad relationships we've had. We want to always just jump in there.
Right.
One of the things that
I just got out of the letter that you were saying from the aunt is that there was nothing in there that was judgmental.
Right.
And whereas the mom tried to be very controlling and was judging everything that she was doing, the aunt was not judgmental. I think the mom, if she could have understood maybe the difference between control and structure or control and boundaries.
Right.
That may have helped that situation, but what the aunt did is pretty much what you do as a professional.
Exactly.
You know, the aunt happened to be able to have the ability to step in and to take that role, which is pretty much what that family needed.
Right. I think so. And, you know, on the parent side, I totally agree. On the parent side, we need to work on our own stuff, too. We don't, you know, I wish there was a manual like we have with our cars, you know, how to, you know, the proper maintenance of children, you know. And, there are things we can do as parents to really not project. And I'm not blaming parents, believe
right.
me, because teens really are just, you know, like I said, they're from another planet sometimes. So.
Right.
But they really trigger a lot of our own stuff from the past. And that also includes what we got from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to lash out and not be rational. We have fears, we have insecurities as people. We're people too.
Mm-hmm.
so we're going to try to put everything we can on that kid who is at the point in their life where they're experimenting. And they're hearing all these wonderful and not so wonderful new things and ideas and independence and freedom and let's experiment with this. And, you know, they go online and learn all these things,
uh-huh.
you know, about drugs and about how wonderful the feelings can be. I mean, there's so much exposure to stuff that sounds so interesting and pleasing to them. We have to, you know, just know that this is going to be out there. And we have to let them make the right choices. And if they don't make the right choices, that's when we have to start, you know, becoming really stronger and listening and guiding and, you know, getting them help if they need it to get their head straight from professionals. And in worst case scenario, get hooked up with a group like your group to where the kids no longer have the power to control their parents and to abuse these substances. The family's done seeing them self-destruct.
Right. Well, so. One of the things that you mentioned earlier that I think really jumped out to me was when you mentioned a little bit about the peer pressure when we were talking more about drugs and such.
Right.
Is, you know, we need to set them up in such a way that we can feel somewhat, you know, relieved that they're going to know when to say no.
And exactly.
And I think that's a huge issue, and I know that it's not easy to just say no. I know
right.
that, you know, we hope that our teens will resist, you know, when they find themselves in a different situation. You know,
exactly.
You know, whether it involves drugs or booze or their sexuality, we cross right. our fingers that their first reaction will be a hearty no.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
But, if you've ever tried to picture, you know, what that just say no situation looks like, you know,
exactly.
we've probably conjured up some scenario of some sort of a dark alley, a thug offering them a joint to our teen
exactly.
who bravely pushes them away. You
right.
know, you know, but peer pressure is seldom that obvious. You know, it's
right.
often often coming from your child's friends who right now mean the world to them.
Right.
So how can your teens say no
right.
and still keep their friends?
Well, just like you said, I mean, that's you nailed it. Many teens feel overwhelmed by what they perceive, you know, as strong peer pressure, and they do a lot of questionable things, as you know. So how can parents help them out? You can teach your teen, you can listen to what they have to say, as I mentioned
right,
earlier.
Right.
Try not to do the three C's.
Yeah.
You can teach your teen to look out for themselves. You know, look out for number one.
Right.
Of course, parents aren't always going to be there. So you have to teach your teens to make rational decisions like, are you doing this behavior to please others? Look within you and use your own sense of your, you know, what is common sense about you. Look out for yourself. Think about this.
Mm-hmm.
I had a mother come to my office with her 15-year-old son. And he was looking very sheepish one day. And she was really angry. I mean, they have these ongoing feuds, and he's loosening up, she's loosening up. They're learning how to communicate a little bit better. She told me that the night before, her son brought home a Alice B. Toklas brownie. One of the girls in his class, as a regular hobby, made marijuana brownies.
Oh.
This was what she did, apparently. And isn't that lovely? And she would give them out at lunchtime to these kids, and she'd brag about it.
Wow.
Her son said, oh, okay, thanks. And he took the brownie. He didn't eat it.
Right.
But he came home with it and said, wow, Mom, this is... And the mother was pissed. She was really mad, if you pardon my French. But, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I would say, thank you so much for bringing this to me. You know what? You made a wise decision. I'm not quite sure as to why you said, you know, okay, thanks.
Right.
And the son replied, well, I'd look really stupid because there was all these kids around. And she, of course, the girl who had the brownies, was making a demonstration how cool she was in front of everybody else. So he said, if I didn't accept it, I'd be laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that's fine. I get it. But the fact that he brought it home and laughed about it and shared it with his mom, she should have said, thank you so much. You know that this is really unhealthy. And
right.
I really want you to hear that what this girl is doing is destroying herself. And we can go online. We can look at some of the stuff that marijuana does, some of the new research on what it does to adolescents' brains.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like, I mean, he rated his options. He looked at what his options were. He looked out for number one. He rated his options, and he thought, okay, I don't want to look like a geek that goes, ew, I'm not touching that.
Right,
You know, so they may not always make the absolute best decision. So,
right.
for instance, you know, probably the best decision might have been to maybe take it and walk around the corner and throw it in the trash so that you don't happen to get pulled over on the way home and the police find it. But it doesn't, because it wasn't the absolute perfect decision doesn't mean that it was a bad decision. He rated his, you know, all we can really do is hope that they are going to really think about it and rate their options and make one of the good decisions.
Right.
It may not always be the one we would choose, but you're right. I agree with you. You know, the mom should have looked at that as a real positive. You know, that he took it to that point. He thought it out and made a pretty good decision.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at the same time explained, like you said, honey, do you know that just if they had a random backpack check, or if you were standing in the wrong place at the wrong time and a school official or a sheriff or something came up to you, and they do have random backpack checks in some schools sometimes, you know, you could have been busted for possession.
Right. But at the same time,
you know, let them weigh those things.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time telling them, I'm not attacking your decision.
Right. Exactly.
I'm enlightening you on other possibilities, but I'm not attacking your decision. I'm proud of you. The fact that you thought it through and you made, you made a decision that was better than hiding it from me, better than eating it, you know, better than a lot of things.
Right. And you know, something that I tell, you know, parents to relax about, and kids to use as an excuse sometimes if they don't want to come off like a nerd or be judged or something, is use their parents. Now, as teens get older, they don't want to use their parents a lot of times because they want to be more powerful to their friends than their parents. But I always say, use your parents as a scapegoat. You know, my dad is such a jerk, he won't let me stay out past 12.
Right.
My dad is, he won't let me go, you know, to whatever after we get out of the movie at 10:30 and hang out. He's really paranoid about curfew. Blame the parents.
Sure.
If the kids are really uncomfortable with hanging out or doing what they need to do just to show their friends that they're cool and they're not okay with it, or they're going to get in trouble for it, blame the parents.
Sure.
One of the things I say to my clients is, blame me. Make me the heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my psychologist said that this is really not a healthy thing to do, so I'm really going to listen to her right now. Because I'm really trying to, you know, feel better about who I am. I said, make me the heavy. Give them my phone number. I will be happy to talk to them or not. But whatever you need, you know, to get yourself from feeling really uncomfortable, it's okay.
Right. And I think if somebody attacks that type of answer, first of all, they probably have their own issues. But secondly, a great comeback to that is, you know, if I was seeing a brain surgeon and they were telling me that I should do this, this, and this,
right,
I don't think I'd blow them off either. You
know? Right. Exactly. Exactly. No, yeah, listen to the professionals, listen to what's happened in the past, you know, and learn from it. Unfortunately, teenagers don't usually do that. They want to find out for themselves. And I want to emphasize that teenagers do and will make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They need to find things out for themselves. We try as parents to prevent them from making those mistakes before they happen. Unfortunately, they are going to make mistakes. They are going to do things, hopefully not get in trouble with the law, but they're going to make dumb decisions where they may be coming out of a movie and, oh, I'm just going to go out driving around and find a burger place with my friends, and it's past curfew and the cops pull them over.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a call in the middle of the night or, you know, in the evening. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we allow them to make mistakes that are not too grave. Unfortunately, they will learn from the mistakes that are grave, and they'll be put in juvie. They will be picked up by people like you early in the morning. They will, and then they're going to have to really, really take a look at how they're conducting their lives and make, you know, wiser decisions about that.
Well, one of the tips that I like in the area of peer pressure is to make the word no funny. I think, you know, if you're going to run in the type of groups of people to where there's going to be things thrown out there that you maybe aren't going to want to do, but just answering with something like, sorry, I'm trying to be less popular. You know, if you throw something like that out there, they're going to realize that you're pretty confident within your own skin, and you're confident with your answer. That's that's not the type of kid that's going to get needled for something. It's you know they're going to go, hey, you know, they're confident in it, you know, that's fine. And you're going to find that if you use humor, throw something out there, you know, or teach your children, you know, use humor, you know, like, you know, again, most of you that we're talking to, you are parents and you're professionals. If you'd like, if there's some of the things that you're hearing here and you go, you know, I really wish my teen could hear this. Now,
right.
You know, you can go to, you can go directly to the radio site, which is www.latalkradio.com. You can listen to or download the show. Usually within about 12 to 24 hours, it's been downloaded and it's on the site. You can also find it on our site, answersforthefamily.com, and that's the numeral 4, answersforthefamily.com. The show will be on there, as is all the other shows. So if you want your child to hear it, sit down with them, listen to it together, and then see if it brings some questions out from them. See how it makes them think. You know, there's anything you can do to be able to be in a position to communicate with them on these subjects is probably going to be a win-win.
That's a great idea.
Well,
that's a really great idea.
Well, and
it totally is.
Well, and along with things that I think you can also go to websites and get. I know that you, Michelle, have the Creating Better Relationships guide. Now, can they get that from your website? And if so, give us your website.
Right, exactly. They can find me at it's drmichelletherapy.com, and it's just DR, it's not doctor spelled out. Dr. Michelle with two L's and therapy, therapy.com. And then all they have to do is go to my website, and then they can just link to my email address, and then I can contact them about getting that guide to better relationships. And, you know, I really help people with how to communicate better. It's focused more on relationships, couples, and families rather than, I mean, of course, teens are included as well. So
Sure. It's
really helping people communicate better and think about themselves, cleaning up a lot of their own stuff. So, yeah, they can sure go ahead and log on to my website. Again, it's drmichelletherapy.com and just get a little bit more familiar about some of the tools I use and absolutely ask about that guide to building better relationships.
All right. You know, I just glanced at the time. I cannot believe this. We are almost out of time.
I know.
it seems like it's been like 15 minutes.
I know. I love talking to you, Alan, because you're so full of information and it just flows. And, you know, it's great.
Well, this has certainly been my pleasure. We have about 3 minutes. Let me throw out just a few more questions. I want the people
Sure.
to know a little bit more. One thing is a little bit more about you. So, I mean, what gave you your greatest insights, you know, into the world of teens and relationships and, you know, their choices and behaviors?
That's a great question. I think when I was starting out probably about 12 years ago, I was working in a hospital. I was working in Northridge Hospital, and it was the First Step program. And I was working with teens. I was leading teen groups. And I started understanding teens a little bit more often and understanding their issues. These were more at-risk teens who were on the verge of going to use the services of your company.
Right.
The court had ordered them to go to these groups to talk about their fears, their problems, their substance abuse issues. So that really enlightened me. And I also led the parent and teen groups. So I saw the dynamic of how the parents dealt with their children, the communication problems they had, and started sort of formulating some kind of solutions to better communication. And this is what really inspired me, was my work at that hospital.
All right.
So from there, you know, I worked in clinics with families and young adults who had many of the same problems. Like I mentioned earlier, it was a dual diagnosis clinic. So they had either depression and substance abuse, anxiety and substance abuse, OCD, you know, whatever the Axis 1 disorder was alongside the substance abuse. So I saw that, you know, along with, you know, there always is another problem with the substance abuse usually. So their families, and they would try to work through, you know, exactly their issues, what they needed. And so that's really what inspired me, is to really help these people and try to understand where they were both coming from and have them come together to detox from the drama that they had created all their lives.
All right. Well, we have time for about one more question, and I had one more question that came in over the email, and that is, what is the best way to handle those deafening silences?
And the deafening silences from the teen?
From the teen, when the teen just completely shuts you out. And I tell you what, I love leaving our listeners wanting a little more, so give us about 30 seconds, and if you want a more in-depth answer, go to Dr. Michelle's website and shoot her out an email, and I'll bet she'll give you a little more info.
That's great. That's great, Alan. I would say if the teen is shutting down, walk away. Not passively aggressively, parents. Just allow them their downtime because they're going through something. They have to process something. They're not in a good mood. They're tired. They're hungry. They have stuff going on that they have to get through. Allow that silence. Just allow it.
All right.
And at a different time, approach them and don't use the three C's as I discussed earlier. And try to just, you know, ask those questions in a non-confrontational way and ask them and listen to them. Say, I'm ready to listen if you have anything to share with me about what went on. You seem kind of depressed today.
Thank you.
Allow that silence.
Thank
don't push
you.
It. They'll eventually come around if you are an open parent who will be empathetic to them.
All
they'll come
right.
around.
All right. Again, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Remember, you can go to Dr. Michelle's website. If you didn't catch that, if you go to the Answers for the Family website, we can help you on how to get in touch with Dr. Michelle. Again,
yep.
Thank you so much. And also, listen to Dr. Michelle's show. It is Fridays at 11 a.m.
And thank you for that plug.
And she will go into a plethora of different subjects as it relates to relationships and keeping those things together.
Thank
Again.
You so much, Alan, for having me on your show. It's
All
been
right.
really fun.
Great.
Thank you.
Everybody out there, have a great day. We're out of here.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You've just found the home of irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio.